I really don't answer my phone anymore. I don't know if you have found yourself in this place, but I will end up with 30 or 40 missed calls at the end of the day and a bunch of voicemails, and I don't answer it anymore. Now, here's the thing. If your name pops up and I know the number, I'm going to answer the phone. But it's kind of at this place now. My number one caller is somebody named Spam Likely. Come on now. How many of y'all got Spam Likely as your number one guy? Yeah, your information's been hacked like mine too, right? And so it really is. This is all these phone calls. I end up with all these messages, and you know the ones that you get, to where it's some robotic voice on the other side, and they are telling you that you owe something. It's an IRS bill, or there is a medical bill, or there's this credit card, or a personal loan. There is something out there that they're saying you owe this payment, and if you don't pay it, something bad is going to happen to you. Now, I know, and you know, those are all scam phone calls. There is nothing real about them. But you want to know why they make so many of those scam phone calls? Because they are effective. Because they tap into this fear that we all have whenever we get a call like that. But what if I do owe? What if my tax guy did mess something up? What if there was somebody who stole my identity, and identity theft is a serious crime, and they did a loan in my name, and so now there's somebody out there with my Social Security number that has started a new credit card, and now I owe something. What if there was a bill that came in, and with all the other junk mail, I just happened to tear up and throw away, and I just missed? I know that it's probably a scam. But isn't there just that one little bit of all of us that thinks, but what if I really do owe? And here's the thing. I think that that little fear, it actually carries over into our relationship with God as well. That we hear about the wonderful grace of Jesus. We hear about his amazing grace. We hear about how his blood is sufficient for us. But there is something deep down inside of us that still has that one little fear that just kind of goes, but what if? What if I still owe something to God up in heaven? And so what does that do? That causes us to start to perform. It starts to make us to try harder and harder and harder. And we end up trying to earn something that God said, I want to give to you freely. And we keep performing, we keep doing, and we keep performing, and we find ourselves exhausted. We are in Romans chapter 10 today, and what Paul is going to be able to do, he's going to do three things for us. He's going to remind us that the bill has actually been paid. You don't owe anything. Jesus is truly sufficient. He's going to show us why religious people are often the last people to believe it. And then he's going to shift it, and he's going to turn it around. And he's saying, so what are you going to do about the person in your life who hasn't heard this great message just yet? So Romans chapter 10, let's jump in. Verse 1 is where we are going to start off today. This is what Paul says. He says, dear brothers and sisters, the longing of my heart and my prayer to God is for the people of Israel to be saved. He said, I know what enthusiasm they have for God, but it is misdirected zeal. So he begins off with this, and you can really feel his heart for these people, for his people. These are the Israelites. This is his nation. This is his people. People he ran the streets with, went to school with, played ball with, all these things. He loves them. And so as we continue through these chapters, I want you to hear a guy with a heart, not just a theologian with a brain. This is his pastoral heart coming out about these people. He says, I know the enthusiasm they have, but it is misdirected. In other words, they're very religious. It's not that they don't care. They don't have energy. They don't have passion. They have all of those things. They are working really, really hard. They're just moving in the wrong direction, for they don't understand, he says in verse 2, God's way of making people right with himself. And refusing to accept God's way, they cling to their own way of getting right with God by trying to keep the law. Now remember, he is not describing irreligious people. He's talking about people who are committed, they are devoted, they go to church, they know all the answers, they've got the right heritage, they've got the right lineage, but yet they're lost. Not because they don't care enough, but because they put their confidence into the wrong thing. Which kind of leads me to a question I just kind of ponder for just a second. You ever think about what it is that the people sitting around you or the people in your life are putting their confidence into? Where are they resting their weight whenever it comes to everything? I mean, there are some people who would try to tell you it's nothing, but nobody believes nothing. Everybody has a spiritual framework that they are working from. Everybody's got something. Everybody's trusting in something. And the question is it going to hold them? For some people, maybe even some of us in the room watching online right now, you would say that you're resting in your own personal goodness. And I'm a good person. I mean, I treat people right, love my family, I work hard, provide. And, you know, if there is a God, I'm probably okay because I imagine that whenever that last day comes and he breaks out the scale and he weighs all of my good against all of my bad, it's going to all even out or I'm going to have a little bit more good. And I am very sincere in what I believe. And that's actually who Paul's describing here in the first part. They think that keeping the law, they think that following the rules and keeping the commandments is going to save them. They're very sincere, but yet they're also very lost. There are other people in our world, maybe even sitting in this room right now, maybe it's a different direction, and they would use a phrase like this: I am spiritual, but not religious. That's what I do. I believe in something. Now, whether it's the energy, the universe, crystals, whatever it is, something bigger than me, and I'm building a belief system around, you know, I don't know, what Joe Rogan believes, right? Or what does this personality test tell me? Or what was that last thing I saw on TikTok? And so that's kind of where it is, and that's where it is. But God, I think the question for this would just be, are you sure that can really hold you? Are you sure that having a belief system like that can hold? I'm not talking about holding you when things are fine, because anything can hold you when things are fine. I'm talking about what happens whenever you're waiting on the test results, or what happens whenever your kid turns prodigal, or what happens when your marriage falls apart, or what happens when you lose the job, what happens whenever you're just lying there staring at the ceiling 3 a.m. and the universe isn't talking back to you. Can that hold you? What's holding the weight of your soul in that moment? And that's the tension that Paul's naming. He's not looking at these people, he's not looking at Israel, and he's not going, those people are bad. He's like, no, you've got confidence in the wrong thing, and you can be confident in the wrong thing, and you're just sprinting faster in the wrong direction. Verse 3, he says, they're refusing to accept God's way. They cling to their own way of getting right with God by trying to keep the law. That phrase, refusing to accept, you can circle it and draw off to the side. It's the word submit. And it's a military term. It means to fall into rank under a commanding officer. In other words, it's not just agreeing with God, but I am going to surrender to him. I'm going to lay down my plans and my rights, and I'm going to pick up his. And so what this means is whenever it comes to the gospel, we don't just understand the gospel and the good news of grace and who Jesus is and who we are. We're to surrender to it. Because verse 4, for Christ has already accomplished the purpose for which the law was given. As a result, all who believe in him are made right with God. I love this word, accomplished. It means the end, it's the completion, it's the goal, it is the termination and the goal at the same time. Here's how my brain works. So I went back in my head to elementary field days. Did you guys have elementary field days? Okay, whenever we did it, we would do races and there would be heats and all the things that would be going on. In my day, we were still a proper country and we ran yards, not meters, right? And so we would do the 50-yard dash or the 100-yard dash or the 200-yard dash. And at the end of all those races, there would be a couple of parent volunteers holding a nice string or a piece of tape, and that was the finish line, right? And so whenever you got there, that the goal was to cross the tape, and it was to get through the tape. So at the same time, whenever you hit the tape, the race was over, right? You don't run the 100-meter dash, hit that line, and just go, well, I guess I'm supposed to run another 100 meters. You're like, oh, no, this is the end. And so that's the idea. That is what accomplishes. Whenever it is reached, the race is over. The objective has been achieved. And what Paul is saying is Jesus is the one who hit the finish line. He is the one who ran the race of righteousness. He's the one who crossed the tape. And so this race was never yours to run. It was always his to finish. And so he finished that race to righteousness. You weren't meant to run the race to righteousness. He's like, he accomplished it. And yet every morning, what do we, so many of us do? We wake up and we think there is a race to righteousness that we have to complete. Did I pray yesterday? Did I read my Bible? Was I kind enough to my wife? Did I give enough this week? Did I lose my temper in traffic? If I did, well, then I guess I'm doing okay with God today. If I didn't, then, man, I got to try harder. And that's that performance treadmill, isn't it? And that is exhausting. And he's saying that Israel is just sprinting on this treadmill with everything they had, and it's leading them into the wrong direction. And so now he's going to shift, and he's going to start to show us two ways of getting right with God. And to begin to that, he goes back to the Old Testament. Look at verse 5. He says, for Moses writes that the law's ways, a way of making a person right with God requires obedience to all of its commands. That's the word to circle there, right? It's all of them. Not just the ones you like, not just the ones that fit your personality type, not just the ones that you find easy, all of them. He's like, if you want to truly, if you want to be made right through the law, you've got to be obedient to all of them. And we all know how well that goes. It doesn't go. And so now Paul, he's going to do something. He's going to quote 12 Old Testament passages as we read through these next few verses. 12 of them. Now, you and I, we read this in 2026, and we are a little annoyed because Paul's giving us homework. It's like, wait a second, I have to go over here and look to the side and see what that little number or that little letter means. Now I got to go back to the Old Testament and figure out what in the world you're talking about. So we see that as a homework assignment, but the first century Jewish person in the Roman Christian church, they hear it. Here's what they would have done. They wouldn't have heard it as homework or footnotes. They would have heard it as like a movie line was being quoted. Okay, so hang with me for just a second. Any of my Gen X, you know, all kind of things. If you hear your favorite movie line, you know exactly what it comes from, right? So if I get up here and I go, I'll be back, right? How many of y'all know exactly where that comes from, right? You know exactly what we're doing. Or if I go, you can't handle the truth, right? We're like, oh yeah, I got that. Or maybe, how about this? I am Iron Man, right? And so you know where that is coming from. And what that does is that instantly you hear those lines and your mind is taken to that movie. Okay? You hear me yell, you can't handle the truth. You can see Jack Nicholson up there on the stand, and hopefully you can't hear what he said, because he said some things he shouldn't have said at that point. But he just starts going back off on Tom Cruise, doesn't he? That's what he does. You hear me say, I'll be back. You've got Schwarzenegger. You got Terminator ready to go. You can see Robert Downey Jr. saying at the end of the movie, I am Iron Man, in that press conference. Immediately you go back, you see the scene, you know the emotion, you know the weight. Well, whenever Paul uses these Old Testament quotes, that's what he's doing. He's pulling them back to the story that they know so well. And so he's not trying to win an argument with proof texts going back and forth going, see. He's pulling their heartstrings and saying, no. This is the way the story is always supposed to go. He's like, I want you to feel this. He's like, even Moses was pointing ahead that grace was on the horizon. We're the ones that turned it into a checklist. He's like, see, this is what's going on. He says, but faith's way of getting right with God says, don't say in your heart who will go up to heaven to bring Christ down to earth. And don't say who will go down to the place of the dead to bring Christ back to life again. He's like, you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to climb to heaven. You don't have to descend to hell. And because finding God doesn't require this massive heroic action. You don't have to storm the castle. You don't have to invade the empire of death, because Jesus already did all of that for you. He did it all. He ascended. He descended by becoming human. He ascended in the resurrection. And so we don't have to ask who is going to do the impossible, because God has already done it. He says this message is close at hand. It's on your lips and in your heart. And that message is the very message about faith that we preach. And what is that message? If you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God, and it is by openly declaring your faith that you are saved. Now, Paul's not giving us a magic formula, but he is helping us see that salvation is going to involve both your heart and your mouth. It's going to take both. There is an internal belief, but it will show up in an external confession. And it's not just about what you feel, but it is about what you will declare. That word declare, it means to say the same thing. It just means that we're going to agree with God. I agree with you, God. I agree with you, God, about who Jesus is, that he is your son, that he was perfect and sinless, that he died on a cross, he was buried in a tomb, and 3 days later he rose from the dead. I agree with you about who he is and what he has done. God, I agree with you about who I am. I am a sinner. I am imperfect. I am unclean. I am in need of your grace. I declare, I agree. This is who you are and this is who I am. And it doesn't say that you will be saved if you keep all the rules, if you're good enough, if you never mess up. But it says if you believe and you declare. And it's all possible because of what Jesus has done. He says the Jew and the Gentile are the same in this respect. They have the same Lord who gives generously to all who call on him. And now he's going to move into Joel chapter 2. He's going to do a quote, which would have been one of the most beloved passages in the Old Testament for the Jewish person. Joel, I know you all read it this morning in your morning devotions, but I'll just remind you. So Joel is writing in the midst of a plague of locusts. Worship is stopped. Everything feels like judgment. And God responds with this promise that just blows their mind. It's verse 13. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. All the way back in the Old Testament, God blows through every boundary that Israel had ever drawn. He says it's not just the people who have the right genetics. It's not just the people who have the right rules to keep. It's not just the priests, not just the prophets, not just our sons, not just our daughters, not just our old, not just our young, but it is everyone who calls on the name of the Lord. They will be saved. And so Paul's point throughout this entire first half of this section is that this has always been God's heart. The invitation has always been this wide. It has never just been about people with right rules or right genetics. It's always, always been for everyone. And here's where it all starts to shift. Because now we've got to start wrestling, if that's the case, then what does that mean for you and for me? And here's how I would just simply put it. It's that if the gospel is for everyone, then that means it's for someone. Okay? What do we mean? We got to get out of this. It's just for everybody out there. And we've got to start to personalize this. That there is someone in your life who needs to hear about this. Around here, we call it, everyone should have a one. Who is your one? Who is it that you are praying about that the Lord is going to use you to lead them to Jesus? Who is that name? Who is that person? Who is that face? I mean, some of y'all, you already know it. You've got a card or you've got the post-it at home and you're praying over them every single day and you wake up in the morning with them on your heart. You go to bed in the morning with them in your heart. It could be the coworker that you eat lunch to next to 5 days a week. It could be the neighbor that you actually know their name, right? You're that neighbor, you know, and you actually know who they are, but it's a specific person in a specific place in whatever zip code God has specifically placed you, that if they would just call on the name of the Lord, that they would be saved. If it's for everyone, then that means it is for someone. So we're personalizing it now. And that kind of leads Paul into these questions here. And he's going to ask a series of questions, and they're a little bit like a chain, because if one of the links breaks, it all just kind of falls apart. He says in verse 14, he says, but how? How can they call on him to save them unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they have never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them? And how will anyone go and tell them without being sent? Remember, this is not a theological point. This is a pastoral point. This is a practical point. He's saying if salvation comes by calling, and calling comes by believing, and believing comes by hearing, then how does someone ever get there if nobody ever opens their mouth to them? In other words, someone becoming a Christian, someone responding to the gospel, it doesn't just happen. The message has to be carried. It has to be proclaimed. It has to be spoken. It has to be delivered. And it has to be delivered by someone, to someone. And that someone who's going to share with someone, it's us. He says, this is the message that we preach. That's what he said back in verse 8. Now, let's reframe that word there, because I think a lot of times people think they hear the word preach and they think, well, that means you've got to stand up on a stage with a microphone, you got a podium or a pulpit or whatever, and you get up there and you give some well-polished presentation. But that's not the word that Paul means. The word that he gives is simply, it means to be a herald. That's it. Think of a town crier. It's a 4th of July weekend, so I've been thinking about Paul Revere. I don't know if that story's true or not, but I like to believe that it is, okay? And so he's just running through the town. The British are coming, the British are coming, the British are coming, riding on through that horse. He has a message to share and to proclaim. He is a herald sharing a message, is he not? It's like, Paul, what are they going to do? I don't know. I just know the British are coming. It's like, well, what about this? I don't know. I was just told to come down here because there was a lamp up there. Then I'm just to ride through the town and just cry out, the British are coming. Everybody get ready. And the reason why this matters is I think this should free us up. See, a herald doesn't have to have all the answers. A herald doesn't have to have a Bible college degree. A herald doesn't need to be an expert in anything. A herald just has to be somebody who's willing to deliver the mail. That's it. You don't have to write the mail. You just got to read the mail and deliver the mail. And so let me make it this simple. If you have feet, a mouth, and a message, guess what? You're qualified to be a herald. You can go out and deliver it. And that's why the scriptures say, Paul says in verse 15, how beautiful are the feet of messengers who bring good news. How beautiful are their feet. My feet aren't beautiful. I haven't worn sandals in 30 years. All right. It's just like, because I don't want to do that to anybody, right? It's just, I don't want young children running away crying after they see my toes, all right? So it's just not good. But the Bible says, beautiful are the feet. Not because of what they look like, but because of what they carry. And they carry the message of grace and hope and salvation. Do y'all feel the weight that Paul is trying to throw on? He says, this is the weight that he feels. If we don't carry it, who's going to carry it? If we don't speak up, who's going to speak up? If we don't tell someone somewhere about the grace of God, how will they ever know? Because verse 17, faith comes from hearing. That is hearing the good news about Christ. Friend, hear me. It does not come through osmosis. It doesn't come from just being in the right environment. It doesn't come from being just a good person. Faith comes through hearing. And if it's going to require hearing, then that means it requires a speaker for someone to share. And Paul knows that whenever we go out and we share this message, not everybody's going to want to listen. And that's where he starts to wind this chapter up, as he's going to set us up for chapter 11 and the message that Josh has for us next week. He quotes Isaiah and says, Lord, who has believed our message? Because he knows not everybody's going to receive it. Not everybody's going to respond. That doesn't change our responsibility. But he knows that. But Paul says that Israel did hear. That this message has gone throughout the earth, the world, the words to all the world, and yet not all of them believed. He says, but regarding Israel, in verse 21, all day long I opened my arms to them, but they were disobedient and rebellious. I think as this chapter comes to a close, that is just such a heartbreaking picture of God holding his arms out all day long to people who just keep walking away from him. And it's not because the message wasn't clear. It's not because the invitation wasn't real. It's because they simply chose not to receive it. And I wonder how many of y'all in this room watching online right now, if that's just not a picture of somebody that you know today. It is your daughter. It is your son. And you trained them up in the way a child should go. And you've had your arms held wide open to them, longing for them to receive what Jesus has for them, and they just keep turning away. It is your spouse, or it is your parent, or it is that coworker that you just have such a great time working with. They're just good people. But yet you know that there is something missing in their life, and it just breaks your heart to know that they have not received the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, here's what I would just tell you. As big as your heart is for them, God has been holding his arms open to them as well. All day long. But here's what I would challenge you with. What if they don't know that God has been holding his arms open to them all day long because nobody has ever told them? And so here's the thing I just kind of wrestle with. If all of this is a chain, where does the chain stop with me? How can I make sure that this chain doesn't break here? How can we, as Corinth Christian Church, right here, Walton County, Georgia, 30052, how can we make sure that this chain does not end with us? Because here's what I know. Somebody shared the gospel with me. And they had the awkward conversation that they were probably nervous to have. They extended the invite to where they didn't know if I was going to say yes or no. They didn't. They said what they needed to say in the right moment. And somebody did that for you. You didn't just come up with this on your own. Somebody shared the gospel with you, and now you know the truth. And there is someone in your life who doesn't. And that is honestly Romans chapter 10 in two sentences. Because here's your bottom line. You cannot earn grace. And you cannot keep it to yourself. It has to be shared. And so today, as we kind of come to a close, I want to talk to a few different groups of folks that are just kind of sitting in our room. Some of y'all, you're sitting in here today and you're on the performance treadmill. You are spinning. You are basing your relationship with God based on how well you are following the rules. And you're exhausted because you just don't know if you earned it enough this week. Friend, Jesus has already crossed the finish line to the race of righteousness for you. You don't have to keep running for righteousness. Just receive. Receive what he's done and rest in it. There's another group of y'all, you have never called on his name. You've been in the room maybe for a day, maybe for weeks, maybe for months, some of y'all maybe years. And you understand and you agree with God intellectually, but there has never been a moment where you have said out loud, where you have moved belief from your head to your mouth, and you've made something public and real. And Paul said that is something that has to take place. And in the New Testament, calling on the name of the Lord, it had a place, it had a moment. It has this moment where it's declared out loud. And for the first Christians in the New Testament, that moment happened in the water. It was baptism. See, baptism was never meant to be this finish line that once we get it done, we've got it checked off. It's like, oh, wow, good, I'm done. No, baptism has always been meant to be this moment where I say, I am calling on his name. I am done trying to do this on my own. I am receiving his grace. And listen, if you have never been baptized into Jesus, never declared him as Lord and Savior of your life, man, do not leave today without talking to one of our prayer partners and making that decision. But for everybody else, if you don't find yourself in those two groups, maybe you've received the gospel, you're a believer. There is one more thing. And I want to tell you a story about a man named Columba. He lived in the 6th century back in Ireland. He was a monk and a scholar, and he just became completely convinced that the gospel was meant to reach the ends of the earth. So it was in the year 563 AD, he and 12 of his buddies, they all fashioned these small little boats, basically just wicker baskets with animal skins, and they pushed off from the coast of Ireland out into the deep water. They didn't have a motor. They didn't have GPS. They didn't have a destination. Some accounts even say that they packed all their belongings in caskets because they were convinced that this might cost them everything. And the only plan that they had was, we were going to sail until we can no longer see the shores of our homes. And so wherever the wind took them, they said, that will be our somewhere. That's where the Lord wants us. And so they end up landing on this tiny little island off the coast of Scotland called Iona. And from that island, missionaries fanned out across Scotland, then into England, then into Europe, and a movement that reshaped a continent started with 12 people in a wicker basket who believed that the good news was worth going anywhere to deliver. Friends, I don't think that God is asking you to get into a wicker basket in the middle of the ocean. But if those 12 were willing to push off from everything familiar toward an island with no name just because Jesus said go, and that message is so important, what is our excuse for not opening our mouths to the person that we sit next to at work? Or the person in the group chat? Or even that one that sits across from you at the dining room table? I mean, these guys were willing to cross the Irish Sea. Can we cross the break room? Can we cross the locker room? Can we cross the cafeteria? Can we do that? So here's what I want you to do. I want you to close your eyes because I'm going to lead us through something here. I want you to get a name and a face in your mind right now. And this is not people in my neighborhood. This is not people in my school, people at work. A face and a name. One face, one name. Who is it? Your coworker. It's a neighbor. It's a college roommate that you still text with. It could be a son. It could be a daughter. It could be a grandchild. It could be a parent, whatever it is. Who is it that you have in mind right now? Because that name, that face, that is your someone. That's your one. Now, where has God planted you to where you will be in proximity with them? Is it the office? Is it the home? Is it school? Is it the field? Is it the gym? Where is it? Where has God placed you into proximity with them? Because that is your somewhere. So we've got our someone and our somewhere. And here in just a second, I'm going to invite you to stand and I'm going to pray over us just a prayer of commissioning, because we are all being sent today. Because how will they hear if we don't go? And whenever we're done praying, we're going to worship together. If you need someone to pray with you personally today, our prayer partners will be up front, off to the sides here. So that will be your moment right now. But right now, with your someone and your somewhere in your mind, right now, I want to invite you to stand. Let's stand together. Let's stand. And so here is our prayer. Lord, give us the courage of people willing to get into tiny boats because they believe that the good news was worth going anywhere to deliver. And so, Lord, show us our one. Lord, show us our somewhere. And when the moment comes, give us the words that we need to speak to herald the good news. There is a God. He loves you. His arms are wide open, longing for you to return to him. And Father, help us to remember, we are not just receiving grace today. We are being sent with grace today. In Jesus' name.